to beat me today. Pushing off the edge, I swing out for the rail and make it, immediately starting the hand over hand to get me to the next one, and then the next, until I finally let go, landing on the first shaking iron pillar. My brain is rattled as the thing shudders violently, and I leap to the next, barely gaining a foothold before jumping to the gravel path at the end of the ascent. Aurelie is right behind me, landing with a grin. This is the best! You clearly need to see the healers. You must have hit your head if you think this is fun. My breaths are choppy gasps, but I can't help but smile at her obvious joy. Just run straight across this one, she says as we reach the twisting staircase posts, jutting straight from the side of the cliff face. Each 3-foot-wide timber rotates from its base in one of the steepest sections of the course. I quickly calculate, if you fall off one of the posts, you'd probably drop at least 30 or 40 feet onto the rocky terrain below. I swallow down the terror, trying to crawl up my throat and focus on the possibility my agility and lightness will give me an edge on this particular obstacle. She continues, trust me, if you pause, it'll roll you right off. I nod and bounce on my feet, dredging up whatever courage I have left. Then I run. My feet are quick, making contact with each post, only long enough to push off for the next, and within a few heartbeats, I'm on the other side. Yes! I shout, throwing my fist up in celebration as I get out of the way for Aurelie. Go, Violet! She shouts. Here I come! Her footwork is more agile than mine as she springs from spinning post to post. A roar sounds from overhead, and I jerk my gaze up just in time to see the underbelly of a green dagger tail as it flies directly over us, headed back to the Vale. I'm never going to get used to that. Aurelie cries out, and my head snaps toward her just in time to see her wobble and slip on the 5th post. The air freezes in my lungs as she careens forward, her belly hitting the next-to-last spinning log as if in slow motion. Aurelie! I scream, lunging for her, my fingertips skimming the 7th post. Our eyes meet, shock and terror filling her wide black eyes as the post rolls her away from me. And she falls, halfway down the cliff. The sun burns my eyes as we stand in morning formation. Calvin Atwater, Captain Fitzgibbons reads, his voice solemn like always. First squad, claw section, 4th wing. He sits 2 rows behind me in battle brief. He's sat. There's nothing special about this morning. Our first trial on the gauntlet has made the roll longer. But it's just another list on just another day. Except it's not. The exceptional cruelty of this ritual has never hit me this hard before. It's not like the first day anymore. I know more than half of the names as they're called. My vision blurs.
Newland Javon, he continues.
2nd squad, flame section, 4th wing. He had breakfast duty with me.
We have to be in the 20s by now.
How can this be all there is? We say their names once, and then go on as if they never existed? Rhiannon shifts her weight at my side, and she abruptly sniffles, the motion jerking her shoulders once.
Aurelie! Donans.
A single tear escapes, and I bat it away, ripping open one of the scabs along my cheek. A trickle of blood follows as the next name is called, but I let that one stain me.
You're sure about this?
Dane asks the next night, 2 worried lines between his brows as he clasps my shoulders. If her parents aren't coming to bury her body, then I should be the one to handle her things. I'm the last person she saw, I explain, rolling my shoulders to adjust the weight of Aurelie's pack. Every Bezgaeth parent has the same option when their cadet is killed. They can retrieve the body and personal effects for burial, or burning, or the school will put their body under a stone and burn their effects themselves. Aurelie's parents have chosen door number two.
And you don't want me to go with you?
He asks, palming my neck.
I shake my head.
I know where the burn pit is. He mutters a curse.
I should have been there.
You couldn't have done anything, Dane, I say softly, covering his hand with mine so our fingers lightly lace.
None of us could have. She didn't even have time to reach for the rope,
I whisper. I've replayed that moment over and over in my head, coming to the same conclusion each time.
I never got the chance to ask you if you made it all the way up, he says.
I shake my head. I got caught at the chimney formation and had to use a rope to get back down. I'm too short to span the distance. But I'm not thinking about that tonight. I'll figure something out before the official timed gauntlet on presentation day. I'll have to. They don't allow cadets to climb back down on the final day. You either complete the gauntlet, or you fall to your death.
All right, let me know if you need me.
He lets me go. I nod and make every excuse to get out of the dormitory hallway. The weight of Aurelie's pack is staggering. She was strong enough to carry so much over the parapet, and yet she fell. And I'm somehow still standing. I can't shake the feeling that I'm carrying her with me as I climb the stairs of the Academic Tower's turret, past the battle brief room, and up to the stone roof, going by a few other cadets on their way down. The burn pit is nothing more than an extra wide iron barrel, whose only purpose is to incinerate. And the flames burn bright against the night sky as I stumble out onto the roof, my lungs straining for oxygen. A couple of months ago, I couldn't have carried a pack this heavy. There's no one else up here as I slip the bag from my shoulder.
I'm so sorry, I whisper, my fingers digging into the wide strap of the pack as I fling it up and over the metal edge of the bin.
The flames catch and whoosh as it becomes more fuel for the fire. Just another tribute to Malik, the god of death. Instead of walking back down the stairs, I make my way to the edge of the turret. It's a cloudy night, but I can make out the shadows of three dragons as they approach from the west, and even see the ridge where the gauntlet lays, waiting to claim its next victim.
It won't be me.
But why? Because I'll conquer it? Or because I'll give in to Dane's request and hide in the scribe quadrant? My entire being repels against the second option, which makes me question everything as I stand here letting minutes tick by before the bells sound for curfew. I climb back down the stairs without a solid answer as to why. I walk through the courtyard, empty, but for a couple who can't decide if they'd rather kiss or walk near the dais, and I avert my gaze, heading for the alcove where Dane and I first sat after parapet. It's almost been 2 months, and I'm still here, still waking every morning to the sunrise. Doesn't that mean something? Isn't there a chance, no matter how small, that I might just be enough to make it through threshing? That I might just belong here? The door that leads to the tunnel we took to cross the ridgeline to the gauntlet this morning opens along the courtyard wall, just left of the academic building, and my brow furrows. Who would be returning this late? Sitting back against the wall, I let the darkness conceal me as Zayden, Garrick, and Bodhi, Zayden's cousin, pass under a mage light, headed in my direction.
Three dragons.
They were out. Doing what? There were no training ops that I know of tonight, not that I'm privy to everything third years do.
There has to be something more we can do, Bodhi argues, looking to Zayden, his voice low as they pass by me, their boots crunching on the gravel.
We're doing everything we can, Garrick hisses.
My scalp prickles and Zayden stops mid-step 10 feet away, the set of his shoulders rigid. Shit. He knows I'm here. Instead of the usual fear that spikes in his presence, only anger rises in my chest. If he wants to kill me, then fine. I'm over waiting for it to happen. Over walking through the halls in fear.
What's wrong?
Garrick asks, immediately looking over his shoulder in the opposite direction, toward the couple who definitely decided making out is more important than getting into the dorms by curfew.
Go on. I'll meet you inside, Zayden says.
You sure? Bodhi's forehead puckers and his gaze sweeps over the courtyard.
Go,
Zayden orders, standing completely still until the other two walk into the barracks, turning left toward the stairwell that will take them to the second and third year floors. Only when they're gone does he turn and face the exact spot where I'm sitting. I know you know I'm here. I force myself to stand and move toward him so he doesn't think I'm hiding, or worse, scared of him. And please, don't prattle on about commanding the dark. I'm not in the mood tonight.
No questions about where I've been?
He folds his arms across his chest and studies me in the moonlight. His scar looks even more menacing in this light, but I can't seem to find the energy to be scared. I honestly don't care. I shrug, the movement making the throb in my shoulders intensify. Awesome, just in time to practice on the gauntlet tomorrow. He cocks his head to the side. You really don't, do you? Nope, it's not like I'm not out after curfew myself. A heavy sigh blows through my lips. What are you doing out after curfew first year? Debating running away, I retort. How about you? Feel like sharing? I ask mockingly, knowing he's not about to answer me.
The same, sarcastic ass.
Look, are you going to kill me or not? The anticipation is starting to annoy the fuck out of me. I lift a hand to my shoulder and roll it, pressing in on the sore muscles, but it doesn't help the ache.
Haven't decided yet,
he answers, like I've just inquired about his dinner preferences, but his gaze narrows on my cheek. Well, could you? I mutter. It would definitely help me make my plans for the week. Markham or Emeterio? Scribe or writer? Am I affecting your schedule, violence? There's a definite smirk on those lips. I just need to know what my chances are here. My hands curl into fists. The ass has the nerve to smile. That's the oddest way I've ever been hit on. Not my chances with you, you conceited prick. Fuck this. Fuck all of this. I move past him, but he catches my wrist, his grip light, but his hold firm. His fingertips on my pulse make it skitter.
Chances at what?
He asks, tugging me just close enough that my shoulder brushes his biceps.
Nothing.
He wouldn't understand. He's a damned wing leader, which means he's excelled at everything in the quadrant, even somehow managing to get past his own last name.
Chances at what?
He repeats. Do not make me ask three times. His ominous tone is at odds with his gentle grasp. And shit, does he have to smell so good? Like mint and leather and something I can't quite identify, something that borders between citrus and floral. At living through all of this, I can't make it up the damn gauntlet. I half-heartedly tug at my wrist, but he doesn't let go.
I see.
He's so infuriatingly calm and I can't even get a grip on one of my emotions. No, you don't. You're probably celebrating because I'll fall to my death and you won't have to go to the trouble of killing me.
Killing you wouldn't be any trouble, violence. It's leaving you alive that seems to cause the majority of my trouble.
My gaze swings up to clash with his, but his face is unreadable, cloaked in shadow, go figure. Sorry to be a hassle. Sarcasm drips from my voice. You know the problem with this place? I tug my arm back again, but he holds fast. Besides you touching things that don't belong to you, my eyes narrow on him. I'm sure you're going to tell me. My stomach flutters as his thumb brushes my pulse and he releases my wrist. I answer before I can think better of it. Hope. Hope? He tips his head closer to mine, as if he wasn't sure he heard me right. Hope, I nod. Someone like you would never get it. But I knew coming here was a death sentence. It didn't matter that I've been trained my entire life to enter the Scribe Quadrant. When General Sorengale gives an order, you can't exactly ignore it. Gods, why am I running off at the mouth to this man? What's the worst he'll do, kill you? Sure you can, he shrugs. You just might not like the consequences. I roll my eyes, and to my utter embarrassment, instead of pulling away now that I'm free, I lean in just a little, like I can siphon off some of his strength. He certainly has enough to spare. I knew what the odds were, and I came anyway, concentrating on that tiny percentage of a chance that I would live. And then I make it almost 2 months, and I get... I shake my head, clenching my jaw. Hopeful. The word tastes sour. Ah, and then you lose a squad mate, and you can't quite get up the chimney, and you give up. I'm starting to see. It's not a flattering picture, but if you want to run off to the Scribe Quadrant, I gasp, fear punching a hole in my stomach. How do you know about that? If he knows, if he tells, Dane is in danger. A wicked smile curves Zayden's perfect lips. I know everything that goes on here. Darkness swirls around us. Shadows, remember? They hear everything, see everything, conceal everything. The rest of the world disappears. He could do anything to me in here, and no one would be the wiser. My mother would definitely reward you if you told her about Dane's plan, I say softly. She'd definitely reward you for telling her about my little, what did you call it? Club. I'm not going to tell her. The words sound defensive. I know. It's why you're still alive. He holds my gaze locked with his. Here's the thing, Sorengale. Hope is a fickle, dangerous thing. It steals your focus and aims it toward the possibilities instead of keeping it where it belongs, on the probabilities. So what am I supposed to do? Not hope that I live? Just plan for death? You're supposed to focus on the things that can kill you so you find ways to not die. He shakes his head. I can barely count the number of people in this quadrant who want you dead, either as revenge against your mother or because you're just really good at pissing people off. But you're still here, defying the odds. Shadows wrap around me, and I swear I feel a caress along the side of my wounded cheek. It's been rather surprising to watch, actually. Happy to be your entertainment. I'm going to bed. Spinning on my heel, I head toward the entrance to the barracks, but he's right behind me, close enough that the door would slam in his face if he wasn't so unnaturally fast at catching it. Maybe if you stopped sulking in your self-pity, you'd see that you have everything you need to scale the gauntlet, he calls after me, his voice echoing down the hallway. Myself what? I turn around, my jaw dropping. People die, he says slowly, his jaw ticking before he drags in a deep breath. It's going to happen over and over again. It's the nature of what happens here. What makes you a rider is what you do after people die. You want to know why you're still alive? Because you're the scale I currently judge myself against every night. Every day I let you live, I get to convince myself that there's still a part of me that's a decent person. So if you want to quit, then please spare me the temptation and fucking quit. But if you want to do something, then do it.
I'm too short to span the distance, I hiss, uncaring that anyone could hear us. The right way isn't the only way. Figure it out. Then he turns and walks away. Fuck him.
Chapter 11. A quote from Major Rorally's Guide to Appeasing the Gods, 2nd edition.
It is a grave offense against Malik to keep the belongings of a dead loved one. They belong in the beyond with the god of death and the departed. In the absence of a proper temple, any fire will do. He who does not burn for Malik will be burned by Malik. The next practice sessions of the gauntlet are no more successful than my first, but at least we don't lose another squadmate. Tynan has quit running his mouth since he can't seem to make it up fully either. The buoy balls are his downfall. The chimney is mine. By the 9th and next to last session, I'm ready to set the entire obstacle course on fire. The section of the course that's my downfall is meant to simulate the strength and agility it takes to mount a dragon, and it's becoming clear that my size is going to fuck me. Maybe you can climb up onto my shoulders and then... Rhiannon shakes her head as we study the crevice that's become my nemesis. Then I'm still stuck halfway up, I answer, wiping the sweat from my forehead.
Doesn't matter. You can't touch another cadet on the route.
Sawyer folds his arms beside me, the tip of his nose now bright red from the high sun.
Are you here to squash hopes and dreams, or do you have a suggestion?
Rhiannon retorts.
Because presentation is tomorrow, so if you've got any bright ideas, now is the time.
If I'm going to run to the scribe quadrant, then tonight is the night. My heart clenches against the thought. It's the logical choice, the safe choice. There are only two thoughts stopping me. One, there's no guarantee my mother won't find out. Just because Markham would keep quiet doesn't mean the instructors there will. But most importantly, if I go, if I hide, I'll never know if I'm good enough to make it here. And while I might not survive if I stay, I'm not sure I can live with myself if I leave.
Doria Merrill,
Captain Fitzgibbons says from the dais. Every one of his features is crystal clear, not only because the sun is behind the shade of the clouds, but because I'm closer. Our formation gets tighter with every cadet who falls. According to Brennan and statistics, today will be one of the deadliest for first years. It's presentation day. And in order to get to the flight field, we'll have to climb the gauntlet first. Everything about the Rider's Quadrant is designed to weed out the weak, and today is no exception.
Cameron Dyer,
Captain Fitzgibbons continues to read from the roll. I flinch. His seat was across from mine in dragonkind.
Arvel Palipa.
Imogen and Quinn, both second years, suck in a breath ahead of me. First years aren't the only ones at risk. We're just the most likely to die.
Michael Iverum, Captain Fitzgibbons closes the roll. We commend their souls to Malik.
And with that final word, formation breaks.
Second and third years, unless you're on gauntlet duty, head to class. First years, it's time to show us what you've got.
Dane forces a smile and skips right over me as he looks at our squad.
Good luck today.
Imogen tucks an errant strand of pink hair behind her ear and aims a sickly sweet smile right at me.
Hopefully you won't fall
short.
See you later,
I reply, lifting my chin. She stares at me with complete loathing for a second, then walks off with Quinn and Sienna, our executive officer, her shoulder-length blonde curls bouncing.
Best of luck,
Heaton, the thickest third year in our squad, with red flames cut and dyed into their hair, taps their heart right over two of their patches, and offers us all a genuine but flat-lipped smile before heading to class. As I stare at their retreating back, I wonder what the circular patch on their upper right arm with water and floating spheres means. I know the triangular patch to the left of that one, with the longsword, means they're not to be messed with on the mat. Since Dane told me about the patch denoting his top secret signet, I've been paying close attention to the patches other cadets have sewn into their uniforms. Most wear them like badges of honor, but I recognize them for what they really are, intelligence that I might one day need to defeat them.
I didn't realize Heaton actually knew how to speak.
Two lines appear between Riddick's brows.
Maybe they figure they should at least say hi before we're potentially roasted today, Rhiannon says.
Back into formation, Dane orders.
Are you going with us? I ask. He nods, still not looking at me. The eight of us fall into two lines of four, the same as the other squads around us.
Awkward,
Rhiannon whispers from my side. He seems kind of pissed at you. I glance up over Trina's slim shoulders as the breeze whips at the braid I've woven like a crown. It's working a few of Trina's ringlet curls loose, too. He wants something I can't give him. Her eyebrows rise. I roll my eyes.
Not like that. I wouldn't care if it was like that,
she replies under her breath.
He's hot. He has that whole boy next door who can still kick your ass vibe going for him.
I fight a smile because she's right. He so does.
We're the biggest squad, Riddick notes behind us as the squads farthest left, from first wing, file out through the western gate in the courtyard.
What are we down to? Tynan asks. 180?
171, Dane answers.
Squads from second wing begin to move, led by their wing leader, which means Zayden is somewhere ahead of us. My nerves are reserved for the obstacle course, but I can't help but wonder which way his scales will tip today.
For 100 dragons? But what will we...
Trina asks, nerves cutting off her words.
Stop letting fear leech into your voice, Luca snaps from behind Rhiannon. If the dragons think you're a coward, you'll be nothing but a name tomorrow.
She says, Riddick narrates, inducing more fear.
Shut up, Luca fires back. You know it's true.
Just portray confidence, and I'm sure you'll be fine. I lean forward so our squad mates behind us can't hear me as third wing begins to march for the gate.
Thanks, Trina whispers in reply.
Dane's narrowed gaze finally locks on mine, but at least he doesn't call me a liar. There's enough accusation in his eyes that I might as well be tried and convicted of it, though.
Nervous, Rhi? I ask, knowing we're about to be called next.
For you? She asks. Not at all. We've got this.
Oh, I meant about the history test tomorrow, I tease. There's nothing going on today to panic about.
Now that you mention it, the whole Treaty of a Reef might just be the death of me,
she grins.
Ah, the agreement between Navarre and Krovla for mutually shared airspace for both dragons and griffins over a narrow strip of the Espen Mountains, between Summerton and Draethys,
I recall, nodding.
Your memory is terrifying, she shoots me a smile.
But my memory isn't going to get me up the gauntlet.
Fourth wing, Zayden calls out from somewhere in the distance.
I don't even need to see to know that it's him who gave the order and not his executive officer.
Move out!
We file off. Flame section, then claw, and finally tail. There's a bit of a bottleneck at the gate, but then we're through, walking into the mage-lit dimness of the tunnel that we take every morning to reach the gauntlet. Shadows blanket the edges of the rocky floor along our path. What are the limits of Zayden's power anyway? Could he use shadows to choke out every squad in here? Would he need to rest or recharge after?
Does such a vast power come with any sort of checks or balances?
Dane falls back, so he walks between Rhiannon and me.
Change your mind.
It's barely a whisper.
No.
I sound way more confident than I feel.
Change your mind.
His hand finds mine, concealed by our tight formation as we descend through the passage.
Please.
I can't, I shake my head, any more than you would leave Kath and run to the scribes yourself.
That's different.
His hand squeezes mine, and I can feel the tension in his fingers, his arm.
I'm a rider.
Well, maybe I am too, I whisper, as light appears ahead. I didn't believe it before, not when I couldn't leave because my mother wouldn't let me. But now I have a choice, and I choose to stay.
Don't be,
he cuts himself off and drops my hand.
I don't want to bury you, Vi.
It's inevitable that one of us will have to bury the other. It's not macabre, just fact. You know what I mean. The light grows into an archway that's 10 feet high, leading us to the base of the gauntlet.
Please don't do this,
Dane begs, not bothering to lower his voice this time, as we emerge into the mottled sunlight. The view is spectacular as always. We're still high on the mountain, thousands of feet above the valley, and the greenery seems to stretch endlessly to the south, with random clusters of squat trees among colorful slopes of wildflowers. My gaze turns to the gauntlet carved into the face of the cliff, and I can't help but follow each obstacle higher and higher until I'm staring at the top of the ridgeline that the maps I've studied show leads into a box canyon, the flight field. I bite my lip as I stare at the break in the tree line. Normally, only riders are allowed on the flight field, except for presentation.
I don't know if I can watch, Dane says, drawing my attention back to his strong face.
His perfectly trimmed beard brackets full lips drawn tight into a frown. Then close your eyes. I have a plan. A shitty one, but it's worth a try.
What changed between parapet and now?
Dane asks again, a wealth of emotions in his eyes that I can't begin to interpret. Well, except the fear. That doesn't need any interpretation.
Me.
An hour later, my feet fly over the spinning posts of the staircase, and I jump to the safety of the gravel path. Third ascent complete. Two more to go, and I haven't touched a single rope. I swear I can feel Dane staring from the bottom of the course, where Tynan and Luca have yet to start their climb. But I don't look down. There's no time for what he thinks will be one last look, and I can't afford the delay of comforting him when there are still two obstacles ahead of me. Which means there's one I haven't even had the chance to practice, the nearly vertical ramp at the end.
You can do it! Rhiannon yells from the top as I reach the chimney structure.
Or you can do us all a favor and fall!
Another voice yells. Jack, no doubt. At least it's only been our squad at practice sessions. But every first year can watch now. Either from the base of the course or the edges of the cliff above. I look up at the hollow column I'm supposed to climb, then dart back a few feet along the path.
What are you doing?
Rhiannon shouts as I grab one of the ropes and drag it horizontally across the surface of the cliff, sending pebbles into free fall. It's heavy as hell and protests the stretch, but I manage to get the bottom portion onto the chimney structure. Pulling the rope as tight as it can go, I plant one foot on the side of the shaft and give the rope a tug. Then, send up a prayer to Zanal that this is going to work.
Can she do that? Someone snaps.
I'm doing it now. Then I lift my other foot and begin to climb up the chimney, using only the right side, walking up stone and leveraging my weight with the rope, hand over hand, The line slips about halfway up as the rope scrapes over a large boulder, but I quickly take up the slack and keep climbing. My heart thunders in my ears, but it's my hands that are killing me. It feels like flames are eating my palms, and I grit my teeth so I don't cry out. There it is, the top. The rope barely cuts the corner of the structure now, and I use what's left of my upper body strength to pull myself up, scrambling to my hands and knees on the path.
Hell yes! Riddick yells, hooting from the top. That's our girl! Get up! Rhiannon shouts. One more!
My chest heaves and my lungs ache, but I make it to my feet. I'm on the last ascent, the final path to the flight field. And standing in front of me is a ramp made of wood that juts out 10 feet from the cliff wall, then curves upward like the inside of a bowl, the highest point level with the cliff top 10 feet above. The obstacle is meant to test a cadet's ability to scale a dragon's foreleg and reach its saddle. And I'm too short. But Zayden's words that the right way wasn't the only way have played over and over in my head all night long. By the time the sun rose and chased away the darkness, I had a plan. I only hope I can actually pull it off. I unsheathe my largest dagger from home and wipe away the sweat on my forehead with the back of my dirty palm. Then I forget the agony in my hands, the throbbing of my shoulders, and the twinge in my knee from landing wrong after the pillars. I block out all the pain, lock it behind a wall like I've done my entire life, and focus on the ramp as though my life depends on making it. There's no rope here. There's only one way I'm getting over this. Sheer fucking will. And so I charge, using my speed to my advantage. There's a drum-like sound as my feet beat against the ramp and the incline sharpens. Just because I haven't personally conquered this obstacle doesn't mean I haven't watched my squad mates take it over and over again. I throw my body forward and momentum carries me upward, running up the side of the ramp. I wait until I feel the precious shift, the moment gravity reclaims my body almost 2 feet from the top, and I swing my arm up and slam my dagger into the slick, soft wood of the ramp, and use it to fling myself the last foot upward. A primal scream rips from my throat as my shoulder cries in protest, just as my fingers graze the lip of the edge. I throw my elbow over the top to gain more leverage and pull myself up and over, using the handle of my dagger as a final step before lurching onto the top of the cliff. Not done yet. On my stomach, I turn to face the ramp, then reach over the side and yank my dagger free, sheathing it at my ribs before I stagger to my feet. I made it. Relief sucks the adrenaline straight out of my body. Rhiannon's arms sweep around me, taking my weight as I gasp for air. Riddick hugs my back, squeezing me like I'm the filling of a sandwich as he hollers in happiness. I'd protest, but right now they're all that's keeping me upright.
She can't do that, someone shouts. Yeah, well, she just did, Riddick tosses over his shoulder, loosening his grip on me.
My knees shake, but they hold as I suck in breath after breath.
You made it!
Rhiannon takes my face in her hands, tears filling her brown eyes.
You made it!
Luck, I draw in another breath and beg my galloping heart to slow. And adrenaline.
Cheating!
I turn toward the voice. It's Amber Mavis, a strawberry blonde wing leader from Third Wing, who was Dane's close friend last year. And there's nothing but fury on her face as she charges toward Zayden, who's only a couple of feet away with the roll, recording times with a stopwatch and looking rather bored with it all.
Back the hell up, Mavis, Garrick threatens, the sun flashing off the two swords the curly-haired section leader keeps strapped to his back as he puts his body between Amber and Zayden.
The cheater clearly used foreign materials not once, but twice, Amber yells. It's not to be tolerated. We live by the rules or we die by them.
No wonder she and Dane are so close. They're both in love with the Codex.
I don't take kindly to calling anyone in my section a cheater, Garrick warns, his
his massive shoulders blocking her from view as he turns. And my wing leader will handle any rule-breaking in his own wing.
He moves to the side, and I'm met with Amber's glaring blue eyes.
Sorengale? Zayden asks, arching an eyebrow in obvious challenge, a pen poised over the book.
I notice, not for the first time, that other than his fourth wing and wing leader emblems, he doesn't wear the patches others are so fond of displaying.
I expect the 30-second penalty for using the rope, I answer, my breath steadying.
And the knife? Amber's gaze narrows. She's disqualified!
When Zayden doesn't answer, she turns that glare on him.
Surely she's out! You can't tolerate lawlessness within your own wing, Ryerson!
But Zayden's gaze never leaves mine as he silently waits for me to respond.
A rider may only bring to the quadrant the items they can carry, I start.
Are you quoting the Codex to me? Amber shouts.
And they shall not be separated from those items, no matter what they may be, I continue. For once carried across the parapet, they are considered part of their person. Article 3, Section 6, Addendum B.
Her blue eyes flare wide as I glance at her.
That addendum was written to make thievery an executional offense.
Correct, I nod, looking between her and the onyx eyes that see straight through me.
But in doing so, it gave any item carried across the parapet the status of being a part of the rider.
I unsheathe the chipped and battered blade with a sharp bite of pain in my palms.
This isn't a challenge blade. It's one I carried across and therefore considered part of myself.
His eyes flare, and I don't miss the hint of a smirk on that infuriatingly decadent mouth of his. It should be against the Codex to look that good and be so ruthless.
The right way isn't the only way, I use his own words against him.
Zayden holds my gaze.
She has you, Amber.
On a technicality?
She still has you.
He turns slightly and delivers a look that I never want directed at me.
You think like a scribe,
she barks at me. It's intended as an insult, but I just nod. I know. She marches off, and I sheathe the dagger again, letting my hands fall to my sides and closing my eyes as relief shucks the weight from my shoulders. I did it. I passed another test.
Sorengale, Zayden says, and my eyes fly open. You're leaking.
His gaze drops pointedly to my hands, where blood is dripping from my fingertips. Pain erupts, pushing past my mental dam like a raging river at the sight of the mess I've made of my palms. I've shredded them.
Do something about it, he orders.
I nod and back away, joining my squad. Rhiannon helps me cut off the sleeves of my shirt to bandage my hands, and I cheer our last two squadmates up the cliff. We all make it.
Chapter 12. A quote from Colonel Kaori's Field Guide to Dragonkind.
Presentation day is unlike any other. The air is ripe with possibilities, and possibly the stench of sulfur from a dragon who has been offended. Never look a red in the eye. Never back down from a green. If you show trepidation to a brown, well, just don't. There are 169 of us by the time the morning is done. And even with my penalty for the rope, we've placed 11th out of the 36 squads for presentation. The piss-inducing parade of cadets before this year's dragons, willing to bond. Anxiety seizes my legs at the thought of walking so close to dragons determined to weed out the weak before threshing. And I suddenly wish we'd placed last. The fastest up the gauntlet was Liam Mari, of course, earning him the gauntlet patch. Pretty sure that guy doesn't know how to take second place. But I wasn't the slowest, and that's good enough for me. The box canyon that makes up the training field is spectacular in the afternoon sun,
with miles of autumn-colored meadows and peaks rising on three sides of us as we wait at the narrowest part, the entrance to the valley. At the end, I can make out the line of the waterfall that might be just a trickle of a creek now, but will rush at runoff season. The leaves of the trees are all turning gold, as though someone has brought in a paintbrush with only one color and streaked it across the landscape. And then, there are the dragons. Averaging 25 feet tall, they're in a formation of their own, lined up several feet back from the path, close enough to pass judgment on us as we walk by.
"Let's go, second squad. You're up next," Garrick says, beckoning us with a wave that makes the rebellion relic on his bared forearm gleam.
Dane and the other squad leaders stayed behind. I'm not sure if he'll be thrilled I made it up the gauntlet or disappointed that I bent the rules, but I've never felt more thrilled.
"Into formation,"
Garrick orders, his tone all business, which doesn't surprise me given that his leadership style is more mission first, niceties last. Go figure, he seems to be so close to Zayden. Unlike Zayden, though, the right side of his uniform has a neat line of patches proclaiming him Flame's section leader, as well as more than five patches advertising his skill with a multitude of weapons. We comply, and Rhiannon and I end up near the back this time. There's a sound like rushing wind in the distance that stops as quickly as it starts, and I know someone else has been found lacking. Garrick's hazel eyes skim over us.
"Hopefully, Atos has done his job, so you know that it's a straight walk down the meadow. I'd recommend staying at least 7 feet apart."
"In case one of us gets torched," Riddick mutters from ahead.
"Correct, Riddick. Cluster if you want. Just know if a dragon finds disfavor with one of you, it's likely to burn the whole lot to weed one out,"
Garrick warns, holding our gazes for a beat.
"Also, remember you're not here to approach them, and if you do, you won't be making it back to the dormitory tonight."
"Can I ask a question?" Luca says from the front row.
Garrick nods, but the ticking of his jaw says he's annoyed. I can't blame him. Luca annoys the shit out of me, too. It's her constant need to tear everyone down that makes most of us keep our distance.
"Third squad, tail section of fourth wing already went through, and I talked to some of the cadets."
"That's not a question."
He lifts his brows. Yep, he's annoyed.
"Right, it's just that they said there's a feather tail?"
Her voice pitches upward.
"A feather tail?"
Tynan sputters from directly in front of me.
"Who the hell would ever want to bond a feather tail?"
I roll my eyes and Rhiannon shakes her head.
"Professor Kiori never told us there would be a feather tail,"
Sawyer says.
"I know because I memorized every single dragon he showed us. All 100 of them."
"Well, guess there's 101 now,"
Garrick replies, looking at us as if we're children he'd like to be rid of before glancing back over his shoulder at the entrance to the valley.
"Relax. Feathertails don't bond. I can't even remember the last time one has been seen outside the veil. It's probably just curious. You're up. Stay on the path. You walk up, you wait for the entire squad, you walk back down. It really doesn't get any easier than this from here on out, kids. So if you can't follow those simple instructions, then you deserve whatever happens in there."
He turns and heads over to a path before the canyon wall where the dragons are perched. We follow, breaking away from the crowd of first years. The breeze bites at my bare shoulders from where we ripped my sleeves for bandages. But we got the blood flow stopped at my hands.
"They're all yours,"
Garrick says to the quadrant's senior wing leader, a woman I've seen a few times in battle brief murmuring to Zayden. Her uniform still has her signature spikes on the shoulders, but this time they're gold and look sharp as hell, like she wanted to throw in a little extra badass today. She nods and dismisses him.
"Single file."
We all shuffle into a line. Rhiannon is at my back and Tynan just ahead of me, which means I'll be treated to his commentary the whole time, no doubt. Awesome. Talk, the senior wing leader says, folding her arms across her chest.
Nice day for a presentation, Riddick jokes.
Not to me. The senior wing leader narrows her gaze on Riddick, then motions to the line of cadets before her. Talk to your nearby squad mates while you're on the path, as it will help the dragons get a sense of who you are and how well you play with others. There's a correlation between bonded cadets and level of chatter. And now I want to switch places. Feel free to look at the dragons, especially if they're showing off their tails. But I would abstain from eye contact if you value your life. If you come across a scorch mark, just make sure nothing's currently on fire before continuing along. She pauses long enough for that last bit of advice to sink in, then adds, "See you after your stroll." With a sweep of her hand, the senior wing leader steps to the side, revealing the dirt path that leads through the center of the valley, and up ahead, sitting so perfectly still that they might be gargoyles, are the 101 dragons who have decided to bond this year. The line starts, and we give one another the suggested 7 feet before following. I'm hyper aware of every step as I walk down the path. The trail is hard beneath my boots, and there's a definite lingering odor of sulfur. We pass a trio of red dragons first. Their talons are almost half my size.
I can't even see their tails, Tynan shouts from in front of me. How are we supposed to know what breed they are?
I keep my eyes locked at the level of their massive, muscled shoulders as we walk by.
We're not supposed to know what breed they are, I respond. Fuck that, he says over his shoulder. I need to figure out which one I'm going to approach during threshing.
Pretty sure this little walk is so they can decide, I retort.
Hopefully, one of them will decide you don't get to make it to threshing,
Rhiannon says, her voice quiet so it barely reaches me. I laugh as we approach a set of browns, both slightly smaller than my mother's Aimser, but not by much.
They're a little bigger than I thought they would be, Rhiannon says, her voice rising. Not that I didn't see the ones at Parapet, but...
I look over my shoulder to see her wide gaze flickering between the path and the dragons. She's nervous.
So, do you know if you're having a niece or nephew?
I ask, continuing to walk forward past a handful of oranges.
What?
She answers. I've heard some of the healers can make pretty good guesses once a woman is further along in her pregnancy.
Oh, no, she says. No clue. Though I'm kind of hoping she'll have a girl. I guess I'll find out once we finish the year and can write our families.
That's a bullshit rule, I say over my shoulder, lowering my gaze immediately when I accidentally make eye contact with one of the oranges. Breathe normally, swallow the fear. Fear and weakness will get me killed. And since I'm already bleeding, the odds aren't exactly in my favor here.
You don't think it encourages loyalty to the wing? Rhiannon asks.
I think I'm just as loyal to my sister whether I've had a letter from her or not, I counter. There are bonds that can't be broken.
I'd be loyal to your sister too, Tynan says, turning around and grinning as he walks backward. She's one hell of a rider. And that ass. I saw her right before Parapet and damn, Violet, she's hot.
We pass by another set of reds, then a single brown and a pair of greens.
Turn around, I make the spinning motion with my finger. Mira would eat you for breakfast, Tynan.
I'm just wondering how one of you got all the good traits and the other looks like she got the leftovers.
His gaze skims down my body. Full body shudder gross.
You're an asshole.
I flip him the middle finger.
Just saying. Maybe I'll write a letter of my own once we get privileges.
He turns and continues walking.
A nephew would be good,
Rhiannon says, like the conversation was never interrupted.
Boys aren't too bad.
My brother was awesome, but he and Dane are my only experience with growing up around little boys. We pass more dragons, and my breathing starts to settle. The smell of sulfur disappears, or maybe I've just grown accustomed to it. They're close enough to torch us. The half-dozen singe marks testify to that. But I can't hear them breathing or feel it either. Though I think Dane was probably a little more rule-abiding than most kids. He likes order and pretty much detests anything that doesn't fit neatly into his plan. He's probably going to give me shit about how I got up the gauntlet, just like Amber Mavis did. We pass the halfway mark and continue. Is the way the dragons stare at us scary as hell? Absolutely. But they want to be here the same as we do, so at least I hope they'll be judicious with their firepower. Why didn't you tell me about the rope plan? Or the dagger? Rhiannon asks, hurt pitching her tone. You can trust me, you know. I didn't think of it until yesterday, I answer, taking the time to look over my shoulder so I can see her. And if it didn't work, I didn't want you to be an accomplice. You have a real future here, and I refuse to bring you down with me if I didn't make it. I don't need you to protect me. I know. But it's just what friends do, Rhi. I shrug as we walk by a trio of browns, the soft crunch of our boots on the dark gravel path the only sound for a few minutes. You keeping any other secrets up there? Rhiannon eventually asks. Guilt settles in my stomach when I think of Zayden and his meeting with the other marked ones. I think it's impossible to know everything there is to know about someone. I feel like shit, but keep from lying at least. She snorts a laugh. If that wasn't skirting the question, how about this? Promise me that if you need help, you'll let me give it to you. A smile spreads across my face despite the terrifying greens we're walking by. How about this? I toss over my shoulder. I promise that if I need help you're capable of giving, I'll ask. But only, I hold up my forefinger, if you promise the same. Deal, she smiles wide. You guys done bonding back there? Tynan sneers. Because we're almost to the end of the line, if you haven't noticed. He pauses in the middle of the path, his gaze swinging right. And I still can't figure out which one I'm going to choose. With arrogance like that, I'm sure any dragon would feel lucky to share your mind for the rest of your life. I pity whatever dragon, if any, chooses him. The rest of the squad is gathered ahead of us, facing our direction at the end of the path. But all their attention is focused to the right. We pass the last brown dragon, and I inhale sharply. What the hell? Tynan stares. Keep walking, I order, but my gaze is transfixed. Standing at the end of the line is a small, golden dragon. Sunlight reflects off its scales and horns as it stands to its full height, flicking a feathered tail around the side of its body. The feather tail. My jaw drops as I take in the sharp teeth and quick darting movements of its head as it studies us. At its full height, it's probably only a few feet taller than I am, like a perfect miniature of the brown next to it. I walk straight into Tynan's back and startle. We've reached the end of the path, where the rest of the squad has been waiting.
Get off me, Sorengale,
Tynan hisses and shoves me back.
Who the hell would bond that thing?
My chest tightens.
They can hear you, I remind him.
It's fucking yellow,
Luca points right at the dragon, disgust curling her lip.
So not only is it obviously too small to carry a rider in battle, but it's not even powerful enough to be a real color.
Maybe it's a mistake, Sawyer says quietly. Maybe it's a baby orange.
It's full grown, Rhiannon argues. There's no way the other dragons allow a baby to bond. No human alive has ever seen a baby.
It's a mistake, all right.
Tynan looks at the golden one and scoffs.
You should totally bond it, Sorengale. You're both freakishly weak. It's a match made in heaven.
It looks powerful enough to burn you to death, I counter, heat flushing my cheeks.
He called me weak, and not just in front of our squad, but in front of them.
Sawyer lunges between us, grabbing Tynan's collar. Don't ever say that about a squadmate, especially not in front of unbonded dragons.
Let him go. He's just saying what we're all thinking,
Luca mutters. I turn slowly to stare at her, my mouth slightly agape. Is this what happens to us the second we're out of hearing range of any superior cadet? We turn on one another?
What? She gestures to my hair. Half your hair is silver and you're petite,
she finishes with a fake smile.
Golden and small. You match.
Trina puts her hand on Sawyer's arm.
Don't make a mistake in front of them. We don't know what they'll do, she whispers.
And now we're grouped up. I shuffle backward a little as Sawyer drops Tynan's collar.
Someone should kill it before it bonds, Tynan sputters.
And for the first time in my life, I actually want to kick someone while they're down. And keep kicking until they stay down.
It's just going to get its rider killed. And it's not like we get a choice if it wants to bond us.
You're just picking up on that now, are you? Riddick shakes his head.
We should go back,
Pryor says, his gaze darting around the group.
I mean, if you think we should, we don't have to, of course.
For once in your life,
Tynan says, pushing past Pryor to start down the path.
Make a damn decision, Pryor.
We take off one by one, leaving the suggested space between us. Rhiannon goes before me this time, and Riddick follows behind, with Luca bringing up the rear.
They're pretty incredible, aren't they?
Riddick says, and the wonder in his voice makes me smile.
They are, I agree. They're honestly a little underwhelming after seeing that blue at parapet.
Luca's voice carries all the way to Rhiannon, who turns